Hey, hi, hello, and welcome to this week's episode of No Planet B on 102.3 FM or at radio.dominican.edu. I am DJ Green, and this is where we talk about environmentally conscious decision making in order to make a better future because we have nowhere else to go. On today's episode, I am going to be talking about natural disasters and how they've kind of escalated throughout the years, how human impact has a direct effect on them, and what we can do to really like help this problem and to make them not as bad as they currently are. So, to start it off, basically natural disasters, we all kind of know, are storms, fires, earthquakes, anything that takes a direct toll on human population. So if we were to think about it logistically, if there was a storm on an island where there were no people at all, it wouldn't necessarily be considered a natural disaster because there isn't really anything to destroy. So when we talk about natural disasters, we talk about how there is a natural event caused by the weather that then disrupts human population, it disrupts our communities, it disrupts basically our everyday lives. So that's what we really are going to focus on when we talk about natural disasters. We are really referring to how it impacts society and everyday life in these communities and societies. So, of course, we all know there are a bunch of different types of natural disasters. They really depend on geographical locations. If you are living in the south, you're going to experience more storms from rain, which can result in hurricanes and even tornadoes, all those kind of things. If you're living in California, you're going to have earthquakes, wildfires. And so it definitely ranges from state to state what kind of natural disaster you're going to experience. There's in Texas, there are extreme weather conditions that make it very hard to survive and sustain a good quality of life from. So those are the type of disasters we will be talking about. So for the first one, wildfires. Let's just start with the obvious. Of course, in California, we have a really rigorous wildfire season, especially now within the last couple of years since the campfire. Everything has really escalated in terms of wildfires and how we deal with them. So wildfires are really caused by not only droughts, but just hotter and drier air climates. And with drier climates, with less moisture in the air, it's going to cause drier vegetation. And then also more winds are very possible to happen because of the uneven levels of temperature on the Earth's surface, which causes high winds. So with those two things happening, you have high winds causing obviously all these dry vegetation areas to blow around all over the California surface, the hills, the coastal surface, and then it's very easily sparked to cause wildfires. And of course, once there's a spark, once a fire starts, California is very, very, very dry. So it's going to cause a huge surge in wildfires. And I am specifically talking about California because we experience it here more than anywhere else. And Oregon, Nevada, they have wildfires, but no matter what, it all leads back to the climate, the conditions, and how the drier areas make a way better environment for these wildfires. And so we specifically see them in California. Floods are caused by the increase in the warming of the planet, which can just increase the amount of events that cause floods because there's a higher level of precipitation in the air. So basically, when there are hotter days, more moisture is being evaporated and then can lead to eventually the environment not being able to sustain the floods because they're not used to that amount of water. Storms are also caused by kind of the same way, the rise in temperature globally that increases the likelihood of severe storms because of the increase in precipitation. So that's more of like, if it's raining really, really, really hard, it's an increase in precipitation is really what it comes down to, the basic level. And then floods will happen because of that. And like I said, our environment is not prepared for that. We are not ready for that increase in flooding. So it floods cities, towns, and whole communities can be destroyed because of it. Landslides are just like a backbone of the storm history. It's basically if there's severe storms, there are more likely to be landslides because the land that is surrounding the mountains and the roadways, all of that, they cannot handle the amount of precipitation that's going on. They can't handle the amount of moisture that they're trying to take in, so the land just slips and falls and can ruin traveling and can impact the housing conditions of the area around it. So it's really, really awful. Droughts are kind of on the other end of things, where it's not precipitation that causes it, but it's a lack of rain, the lack of natural rainfall, because since our areas are so extreme right now, in areas that have severe storms, they're going to have high levels of precipitation, and in areas with drought, they're going to have very low levels of precipitation, which leads back to California. We do not have a lot of rainfall. We do not have a lot of natural water coming from the earth. So, of course, we will experience droughts. And droughts are completely awful. It leads to communities being without water for a very long time or having to limit their amount of resources just so they can sustain their quality of life. And it should never be a thing. Droughts should never be a thing. And it's actually crazy because for wildfires, we need water. But in California, we have wildfires and we have droughts. So it's very counterintuitive. We don't have water to feed those fires, or to get rid of the fires. But on top of droughts, of course, California specifically, and also other countries around the world, experience earthquakes. So earthquakes are really more caused by theories more than anything else. So if you talk about an earthquake with a natural disaster scientist, they're gonna say, oh, you know, we can't really account earthquakes to a specific source, but we can tell you that it's definitely due to a little bit of change in the climate. And they get worse as the climate gets worse. To easily explain that in the most simple way is that the reduced atmospheric pressure might allow fault lines to shift more easily. So the increase in rainfall following these hurricanes and these natural storms from other states when they move over, it can result in more erosion and can reduce the weight on fault lines so that they can move easy. They can move more easily than they did before. So the increased rainfall might also lubricate the fault lines to make them have more slippage and to cause more earthquakes, therefore. So it's pretty complicated, but what it comes down to is all these natural disasters are in one way or another accounted for human activity. And I will get more into that in the next segment on the history of natural disasters. So for now, you're listening to No Planet B. My name is DJ Green, and this is on 102.3 FM or radio.dominican.edu. Penguin Radio, the only radio station of Dominican University of California. This is where we talk about environmentally conscious decision making in order to make a better future because we have nowhere else to go. Hello, welcome back to No Planet B. I am your host, DJ Green, and you are listening on 102.3 FM or at radio.dominican.edu. This is where we talk about environmentally conscious decision making because we have nowhere else to go. So in my last segment, I introduced natural disasters and went over the most known types of natural disasters. There are a few others, they just don't happen as much, and so I just touched on the ones that are more popular. I don't want to say popular, but just are more occurring in our world. So in this segment, I'm going to be talking about the history, a little bit about the history of natural disasters. And of course, as humans on a planet with a lot of weather changes, a lot of spikes and falls in weather, there have always been a lot of natural disasters, and ones that have, of course, been far worse than others, and ones that weren't as bad as another one. But this number is steadily increasing as the storms we see now are getting worse and harder to control as well. So we, of course, as, like I said, humans, we just live in this planet that has severe weather storms and cases. And we've never really been able to control that. We can't, you know, tell Mother Nature, oh, stop flooding our cities and stop burning down these hillsides. But the thing is that we are increasing in population, which means that we are building more residences near the coastal areas. We're building more homes, offices, infrastructures, anything you can really think of. There have been more people, so there are now more houses. There's more area to be damaged. And yeah, so it's basically, as these storms are getting worse, it's because of an increase in human population, climate change, and all of that stuff is stuff that we can control, which is good. So an interesting fact that I found from the National Centers for Environmental Information is that 2020 set a new annual record of 22 events that were over $1 billion. So major weather events that cost the state more than $1 billion. And that basically shattered their previous annual record of 16 events that were in 2011 and 2017. And the crazy part is 2020 is the sixth consecutive year from 2015 to 2020 in which 10 or more billion-dollar weather and climate disaster events have impacted the United States. So just the United States alone, there have been six consecutive years of 10 or more billion-dollar weather events. And those are considered disasters. So that's a lot to happen in just one year, especially just in one country. I mean, I think that's incredible, and it's really shocking. It was shocking to me. So, like I said, 2020 did have the most on-record amount of disasters, costing the state over $1 billion in repair. In repairs, anything from rebuilding to providing different housing for people, just anything that costs the state money to rebuild is considered an expense to from the natural disasters. So for there to be 22 events that cost more than $1 billion for each state, I mean, that's pretty drastic for, of course, the state's economy, everything, and the population. They are suffering, trying to be able to afford rebuilding their communities that was literally caused by a natural disaster. Of course, there are insurance companies that cover, you know, throughout different states. Of course, California, we have earthquake insurance. And now a lot of people, since the wildfires have been getting so bad, it wasn't really necessary before, maybe like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, but a lot of people have been getting fire insurance, wildfire insurance, because they have been getting so scary. They have been just out of control pretty much when it's fire season. We have a lot more structures that are being threatened, and companies can't afford to lose all of that without a backup. It's just not possible. You can't get your community back to full function. You can't get businesses back up and running to the capacity that they were at before. It's just not possible without something protecting you. So yeah, it's crazy. And so for each state, they have different, you know, insurance plans. There's hurricane insurance, all that kind of stuff, you know. But we don't need that necessarily in California. So back to the statistics, and all of these numbers are coming from the National Centers for Environmental Information. They are the NOAA. So there have been 119 in total of $1 billion or more dollars events from the years 2010 to 2019. So basically, I put that in there to just really show that just in 2020, there were 22 events, and there were 119 in total from like a 9-year span. So just 22 in 1 year, that shows that we have made a very big increase in the amount of natural disasters happening annually that are considered disasters and not just major weather events. They're literally considered disasters. So the last fact statistic I'm gonna throw at you guys from the National Centers for Environmental Information is this: severe storms have caused the highest number of billion-dollar disaster events, 132. While the average event cost is the lowest, 2.2 billion, so that's gonna be like the average lowest, which is insane. Tropical cyclones and flooding represent the second and third most frequent event types, which is 52 and 33 for cyclones and flooding. Tropical cyclones are responsible for the highest number of deaths, which is around 6,500, followed by drought and heatwave events, which is around 4,000. And severe storms come at the last of that, around 1,700. So that just gives an overall viewpoint of what storms are kind of the most severe, the most impactful towards human population. And like I said, that would be flooding. Oh, my apologies. It would just be those are the second and third. Anyway, it cannot, all of these events, although they're really impacting us heavily and strongly, we can't just go and blame the weather. You know, we can't just be like, hey, this sucks, can you please stop? Like I said before, humans have never been able to control that. But the thing that we can control is climate change. And although all of these events, all of these natural disasters, these severe weather storms, anything that you can think of, they can't all be accounted to climate change. But of course, as human population gets larger, as we are taking up more natural resources, we are disrupting the earth to an extent that is almost unforgiving. We are putting so much stress on the environment that these severe weather events are getting worse. They're becoming disasters. And in my previous segment, I explained how it's considered a natural disaster because there is human population to destroy. There are things that can be destroyed, so it's going to be considered a disaster. If it was just an island with nothing on it, it would be considered a storm, but not necessarily like a natural disaster or anything really severe, because there's nothing to destroy there if no one lived there, in theory. So with more people on this planet, there's a lot more things changing in the environment. There's going to be an increase in precipitation levels that I explained a little bit in the segment before this, but it basically is just that the weather's changing, and with all those things, there's going to be more droughts, there's going to be more storms, and it can all be accounted to climate change in a sense. Not all of it, but in a sense, a lot of it. So yeah, in my next segment, I'm going to be talking about the threat that natural disasters have to sustainability and to us, really. So you are listening to No Planet B once again. My DJ name is DJ Green, and you are listening on 102.3 FM or radio.dominican.edu. And this is where we talk about environmentally conscious decision making in order to make a better future, because we have nowhere else to go. Hello to everyone who is listening, and welcome back to the third segment of today's episode on No Planet B. You can listen in on 102.3 FM or at radio.dominican.edu, the only radio station of Dominican University of California. I am your host, DJ Green, and this is where we talk about environmentally conscious decision making because we have nowhere else to go. So in my previous segment, I talked a little bit about statistics of the history of natural disasters and how 2020 set a new record for the amount of $1 billion or more dollars invested into reparations from a weather event. So a natural disaster. 2020 set that record for there being 22 annual events, and that was the largest number that they've seen since 2017. So since we know a little bit more about the statistics, the numbers of storms, what kind of storms kind of do the most damage, and how a lot of this can be put on climate change. A lot of this is happening because our environment is changing. The storms are getting worse. Of course, I said it in my previous segment, I'm gonna say it again. Natural disasters cannot be solely blamed on climate change and human involvement alone. You just can't do that. Obviously, there are natural changing states of the environment that were bound to happen with or without us. Of course, they happened before we were really even here fully. But a huge step in decreasing the chances of more and more destruction being caused by these natural disasters is taking action in regards to global temperature levels. That's has to be recognized as something that is extremely important. If we don't take responsibility for our actions and take the state of the environment seriously, we are going to see way worse problems happening. There are going to be almost worldwide fights over water. It's just not going to look good for us. And so scientists now are really, really, really demanding that we look at these global temperature levels and we make every single action that we possibly can to lower all our levels of global temperature, basically, because the planet is warming at an excessive rate, something that they have never seen before, and that causes more storms. It causes natural disasters such as droughts. It causes just a whole mess up in the Earth's natural environment. And so it's being seen globally that this is clearly getting worse. We can't ignore it, and there's no reason we should ignore it because we only have one planet. We don't have anywhere else to go. So, of course, if we don't put an end to the rising of global temperatures, things are just going to get worse, like I said before, and the state of our environment will be even more at risk for these intense natural disasters, and they're just going to be more frequent and more damaging, and just basically what we've seen over the past couple years. I know that in winter or the hurricane seasons, all those types of seasonal events, fire season here in California, that hits very close to home, literally. And it's scary. I turn on the TV every single day. There's a new news event of a severe weather disaster. And that's almost every day. Globally. But the United States, of course, it's going to be hurricane season or weather, like any weather season. snowstorms, all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to talk about how natural disasters really can alter and even destroy the quality of life where they occur, and it can take years to rebuild that foundation again. So wildfires obviously can decrease the amount of land to use for vegetation and the production of resources where the fire occurred. So if we're talking about California, a lot of crops, let's think, okay, it's summer, the crops out there that they are harvesting or whatever they do. I don't know much about farming necessarily, the logistics of it, but it can literally destroy thousands and thousands of dollars of crops that would then benefit our economy. It would benefit our people, and the farmers literally have their whole funds taken away. So that's damaging and awful, and it can also tear down buildings, infrastructures that are used for production of food. The wildfires are insanely scary and very, very real out here, especially in California. So next we have floods, also a very obvious destruction of population. They can get really bad. They can take out homes, and they can just threaten the communities that live in the places that are high chances of damaging floods. And floods have been getting worse over the past couple of years. I remember seeing pictures circling around social media of people literally bringing surfboards out into the streets, thinking it's all fun and games. And even though it's cute, it's fun, it's actually very scary, because if we don't take this stuff seriously, like I said before, that it's not going to get better at all. And of course, storms such as hurricanes and tsunamis can completely wreck communities. They can take out buildings like nobody's business, and the housing structures can take absolutely years to rebuild because there are so many people living there and they don't really have the money, because all of their resources were basically taken away. And that's why it's so important to support communities going through that stuff, because they need to rebuild, they need to pay for the wreckage to be taken away, to be cleaned up, all of that stuff. It's seriously no joke, it's scary, and it's just awful. Of course, specifically out of hurricanes and tsunamis are a lot more dangerous. They can wipe out miles of infrastructure to the populations that live along the coastal areas experiencing tsunamis. And then lastly, there are droughts that can totally impact everyday life and lead to a loss in water supply for specific populations that are in the states of severe droughts. I know that, again, I'm going to mention California. We have experienced a drought, a water shortage for, I feel like, as long as I've been alive. Honestly, at this point, it feels like it's been so long, and I have always had a weird fear that we're gonna run out of water. It's always been something that scared me, because we need water to survive. And it's just scary because it feels as if maybe we wouldn't receive a lot of help because everyone needs water. That's something to be very stingy about because it makes sense. So yeah, if we don't get these natural disasters into check, if we don't start recognizing that our actions really do make a difference, we're going to be in some serious trouble, and it can get really scary. And I don't mean to say that as something that is meant to cause fear in anyone. It's just the truth, and it's not a scary thought because it can get better. That's the good part. It's only scary if we don't do anything about it, and that's the bad part. So, yeah. And of course, just to make the point again, when natural disasters do occur in these communities, they have to spend these billions of dollars to restore their life that they lived prior to the storms, just for it to maybe happen again next year. That's a horrible thought for me. I hate thinking about if maybe a company, let's talk about a building, was burned down and they make the building again. How do we know that the next year's fire season isn't gonna, you know, take down that same building? We don't know that, and we just risk it because we have faith in humanity, or whatever the case may be, because we have to keep going, and we will keep going. The only way we can keep going, though, is to prevent these natural disasters from getting worse. Not to prevent them entirely, just from to prevent them from increasing and destroying more things than they really need to. So I'm going to talk about that in the final segment, about how we can prevent a rise in these damage levels from natural disasters. So once again, you're listening to No Planet B. I am your host, DJ Green, and you can tune in at radio.dominican.edu, Penguin Radio, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. And this is where we talk about environmentally conscious decision making in order to make a better future, because we have nowhere else to go. Hello, and welcome to the final segment of today's episode on No Planet B. I am your host, DJ Green, and you can listen at radio.dominican.edu, Penguin Radio, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. This is where we talk about environmentally conscious decision making in order to make a better future, because we have nowhere else to go. So, on today's episode, I have been talking about natural disasters and how they happen, why they happen, the history of them. Are they getting worse? The answer is yes. All those types of fun facts that aren't necessarily so fun, because we have to really recognize that a lot of the reason that natural disasters are getting worse is because of human population. We can't deny it. The things that we do kind of piss off Mother Nature a good amount, to where she's like, hey, no. I'm going to show you who's boss, and we're going to make you work a little bit harder for what you're doing. Yeah, so even though the situation's not really like that, that's how I view it. I feel like we have made Earth mad enough to where it needs to fight against us. We are the problem sometimes. We're also the solution a lot of the time. And in this segment, I'm going to talk about how we are the solution, how we can be the solution, and how a lot of companies, a lot of people already are the solution. They are the ones making a difference towards bettering our environment, which will then cause climate change to slow down, to relax, and to let Mother Nature breathe again. So that's what I'm going to talk about. Of course, natural disasters happen naturally. Weather events, they change. Things are not controllable in our environment. The only thing is that if they get worse, things get worse. Human humans can't stand. We can't fight against nature. It's very hard. We can't control it. We don't have any tactics necessarily, except putting up like seawalls and spraying our houses before a fire gets near it. And those things don't always work. There are always ways around it. Mother Nature finds ways around everything. Trees can grow through cement. It's pretty powerful stuff. So there's not a lot that we can do to prevent that from happening, but we can slow it down. We can slow down the speed that it's happening, the rate at which natural disasters are getting worse by individual action and through corporations. If you've listened to any of my other episodes, I talk about individual action a lot and what we can do. It's usually the final segment in my episodes, and some of it's pretty repetitive, and it's because if we make these little changes every day, if everyone does something every single day, they're simple changes. There's nothing serious. It's not rocket science. If we do it every day, though, as a collective, it can make a huge difference, literally a world's difference. It would change everything. I just know that there are so many people out there who doubt their individual impact on this environment. So I just want to say again the things that we can do in our everyday lives. So in general, we want to take actions to reduce our environmental footprint. And all of these actions can come from reducing the amount of unnecessary energy that you use, reduce the amount of water that you use, doing anything you can to not contribute to air pollution, to physical pollution, like littering or dumping anything into the waters, which is also littering, and maybe incorporating more vegetables, fruits into your diet, and possibly reducing the amount of dairy and meat in your diet, just because those all lead to climate change, all of those things. And I've talked about most of them in my previous episodes. You can find about all those topics that I just discussed. So ways that you can really reduce your use of unnecessary energy is just turning off the lights when you leave a room. It's very simple. Keep the lights off when you're in your house or when you leave your house. And if you are in your house and you have natural lighting and you have the blinds open, that light does not need to be on the ceiling. I see you. It's so unnecessary. Why is it even on? Is it a comfort thing? Who knows? Turn it off. We don't need that there. And then you can incorporate timed light switches. Those are always fun. And they actually make a big difference. Of course, reducing water is as simple as turning off the water when you're brushing your teeth. Literally so simple. Also, when you're doing the dishes, if you're washing like a big plate, you can turn off the water. It doesn't need to be on. It'll heat up in like 2 seconds. Don't worry about it. And taking shorter showers, washing your face, you know, turn off the water when you're actually washing it. Turn it back on when you need to rinse. And there's also, this one's a little bit more active, saving the water overflow from showering to repurpose in gardens, watering plants, all that kind of stuff. And then as much as you can to not contribute to air pollution is basically just carpooling, driving only when you really need to. I have a bike. They're really fun. You guys should get a bike if you don't have one. And then pretty much the end, I just want to talk about supporting companies that actually are reducing their use of natural resources. Their excessive use of natural resources is what I should say. They're really taking data, they're looking at their statistics of their company, and they are bettering themselves every day to therefore better the environment as well. It is a win-win situation when companies really look at themselves and they say to themselves, hey, we don't need these much supplies. Like, we don't need all this stuff. It's pretty polluting. We don't need to package this way. We can package this way. Whatever the case may be, they're doing it. And it feels really good to know that companies are actually taking the environment serious and they don't just care about money. Because sure, maybe paper straws, maybe they weren't a good idea. but they led to better ideas such as straws made from plants that are completely biodegradable and they don't melt in your drink. Even if it's a bad invention, it's going to lead to a better one. Even if it's something so silly, it's going to lead to people being thinking to themselves, hey, that's a good idea. Straws are all over the oceans. They're everywhere. They're on the beaches. Let's fix that problem. So it leads to a solution. It might not start as one, but it leads to one, you know? So anyway, back from the tangent, companies that reduce their use of water and energy are going to be considered sustainable companies, renewable companies, all that kind of thing. And there is actually a website that can give you a list of companies that are considered 1% for the planet. So 1% for the planet, the company is 1% for the planet. The website is 1%fortheplanet.org. I don't think I mentioned that. I do just want to say that right now. That's going to be the website that you can go on. So 1% for the planet is a global movement created by two businessmen that had a passion for the health of our environment. 1% for the planet works with companies that are reducing their use of harmful materials in their workforce and increasing the use of renewable energy, biodegradable materials, and corrective action. That is a really simple explanation of what these companies are actually doing. It is a crazy movement. These companies are working so hard every single day to look at what they can do to change, because there is a certain amount of things that have to be done to be considered 1% for the planet. So this is quoted by one of the founders of 1% for the planet from his book, Let My People Go Surfing. His name is Yvonne Chouinard. I'm sure I pronounced that wrong, but I want to read the quote really quickly. The intent of 1% for the planet is to help fund these diverse environmental organizations so that collectively they can be a more powerful source in solving the world's problems. Very simple quote. That's really just saying, hey, we're going to help fund your environmental actions and your basically your company just to be better for the environment. It's so cool. So the companies get funded and the earth is getting treated at the same time. It's totally a win-win situation. These companies, it's like incentive to the companies because they're going to get funded to do it. And of course, if there's extra funding, all that kind of good stuff. So they get to use it. And these companies range from grocery stores to actual environmental organizations, anything you can really think of. So that's what I have for natural disasters and what we can do to stop them from getting worse. And guys, I promise this is a very doable thing. It's nothing serious that can't be fixed. It's actually very serious, but it can be fixed is the good thing. So thank you for listening. And once again, this is No Planet B on 102.3 FM. Penguin Radio, the official radio station of Dominican University of California. I am your host, DJ Green, and this is where we talk about environmentally conscious decision making in order to make a better environment, because we have nowhere else to go.